Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Network. I'm your host, Chris Manning, and if you don't remember, I'm the editor of Fear the Sword, writer of Hardwood Paroxysm. That's all you really need to know. And this is, you know, just a little test run again for us. We're kind of planting things out and going to see what you guys like as listeners and, you know, kind of what works for us. But today I'm happy to be joined by a very special guest. He is Fear the Sword's Las Vegas correspondent. He's the man behind the Fear the Sword Twitter account. It's Ryan Morton. Ryan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. What's up?
I'm good, man. First off, how did you survive Vegas? I mean, I don't even know how long you were there, but it seemed like way too long.
I think it was 10 days. It might have been 9. But I don't know. Not well, I think, because today's like the second day I've been home and all I've done is sleep. So it's like after day 3, you kind of see everyone that's still there turning into zombies.
Yeah.
And it's tough to explain.
Were you the longest person from SB Nation there? Or did anyone stay longer than you?
No, there were a few people that were there longer than me.
Oh my god.
Which is like torture. Like Tim Cato.
Oh, shout out to Tim in Vegas.
Yeah, so he had to stay the whole time, I'm pretty sure. So he was there the entire time. Or no, wait, maybe he left when I left, actually.
Either way, that's brutal. That is a long time to be in Las Vegas. But
I think one person stayed for the entire thing, but it was his first time, and I think he learned from his mistake.
Yeah, I'm hoping next year will be my first time going to Summer League, and I already don't plan on staying the full time. I just know. I know I got to get in. I got to watch the basketball that matters. I need to leave before I just get stuck there.
Five to six days, I think, is the sweet spot. Last year I did 11 and hated it. I mean, you don't hate it. It's fun, but, you know, eventually it wears on you that there's a city in the desert that's 115 degrees at all times, and you don't see clouds. Water is a myth. Like, you know, so it's either you're hot and miserable outside or you're spending a lot of your money somewhere. Or you're sitting at home thinking about how you're in Vegas doing nothing.
That's brutal. That's brutal.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
With SD, you know, you get drunk until 6 a.m. talking about basketball and other random things every day, which is fun, but it's also tiring.
Yeah, it's exhausting. I mean, the Cavs, since bringing it back, didn't even spend that long in Vegas, so you're the real hero, Ryan. But the Cavs, the NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers, as we like to say over at Fear the Sword, made it pretty far in Vegas. They made it to the semifinals of the tournament portion of Vegas, I believe. You know, the Bulls finally had to beat them in the playoffs at some point. But I got to bring the shade, Ryan. I got to do you proud if you're here. But I think two names really stand out from Summer League, and I think that's Jordan McRae, the guard that they picked up from the Delaware 87ers during the season last year, and rookie Kay Felder, the point guard from Oakland University, who used very small second-round pick. The Cavs spent about $2 million, I think, to get the second-round pick to get Felder. And I think they're the two names we paid attention to the most. And to start with Felder, because I think he's the one that people have fallen in love with a little bit. And I think there's reasons why, because he can jump. He's did that really sick behind-the-back pass, near the I think against the Bulls or maybe the game before. And he looks like an exciting guy, but what are your takeaways from him after watching him play several games in Vegas?
Well, we'll start with the embarrassing one, which, like, I had a really fire tweet ready about, you know, just one more thing we're going to take from Oakland, and I shared it with Bram Kinchlow, the editor, one of the editors of Golden State Mind, and he was nice enough to inform me that Oakland is actually in Michigan.
Yeah.
And that's why Draymond Green likes him so much.
Yeah.
So I saved myself a lot of embarrassment there. Had no idea. Kind of an idiot. Don't pay much attention to college. But he can really play. I don't know. You know, there's two concerns in that his jumper doesn't seem that great, you know, from outside. And he's 5'9", so you're always going to have some concerns defensively. But as far as handling the ball and, you know, getting he's so fast.
Yeah.
And he has a great handle, and he makes pretty good decisions. He has good vision. So, I mean, he's an NBA-caliber player. Like, it's pretty obvious. You know, the guys that you see really stand out, unless it's Anthony Randolph, are generally NBA roster players. But does that mean he's a 15th man? Does that mean he's a backup point guard? You know, there's some room to figure that out. But, I mean, he can really play. He can drive on, you know, he's driving on NBA-caliber players. So I think he should be fine as far as making it to the league goes. From there, it's a little murky.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because on one hand, you see the athleticism. You know, he's a very confident guy. I think he said before the draft that if he was, you know, 5 inches taller, he'd be a top 10 pick. And that's pretty bold and pretty confident for a guy. But I think you're right to hit on the concerns. I mean, he's really short. He can't play the two at all, I don't think, at the next level. And he needs to be able to hit threes, I think, to find minutes. On the Cavs. Like, I think he needs to hit threes and kind of be an off-ball player, and I don't think that's there right now. And I think the other thing here is the Cavs don't really need a traditional backup point guard in the sense that some teams need a guy who can come in and directly fill in for their point guard for, you know, let's say 20 minutes a game. The Cavs, because they have Kyrie Irving and LeBron James, have two guys that if you stagger the minutes correctly can handle the ball a lot. And as we saw in the playoffs especially, the Cavs use that bench lineup where it's LeBron and four bench guys. And he's basically functioning as the point guard. The thing with Felder, I think, that's important is he's sort of being tasked with replacing Matthew Dellavedova, who's your favorite player of all time. And yeah. He, as much as Delly has his flaws, he was pretty decent and pretty good, to be honest, at defending bigger guards. He could defend twos if he needed to, and he's really pesky defending ones. And he could hit threes off ball with LeBron on the floor. That was basically his role in a very limited sense, and he did it really well. I don't think Kay Felder can do that, but right now at least, but at the same time, I think the opportunity for him is there because LeBron had that, then he was the third LeBron point guard where LeBron saw him out of college and was like, I want that guy. And two, I'm not really totally buying Mo Williams in 2016-17 as your backup point guard on a team that's going to have to beat the Warriors and, you know, the other really good teams that have really good point guards. And can he defend those guys? I don't know. He's older. He had kind of old man knee issues last year. He's a gunner, and he hasn't really been an active defender even when he was healthy for a couple of years. So the opportunities for Felder is there. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think, and Mo picking up his option, I think, was a symptom of that. I'm pretty sure his knee is shot.
Yeah.
Like, we heard he was contemplating surgery, and you know, he sat all season because it wasn't looking good, and he came back in the playoffs, and he could play really sparingly. So I'm pretty sure Mo's knee is shot. But I don't think they're looking at Felder to replace what Dellavedova does so much as sense of, you know, a lot of where Delly struggled as a reserve point guard was holding leads and blowout. Like, you know, you want to take out LeBron, you want to take out Kyrie, you want to take out Kevin. But a lineup of Delly and none of those three can't hold a 25-point lead, like, in a quarter. Like, it'd be down to, you know, 17, or, you know, you start at 20 and it's down to 10 in, like, 5-6 minutes. And that was where a lot of his struggles came in.
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
And I think, you know, for the regular season, he makes a lot more sense in a role of a guy that can ideally run a team for the fourth quarter and keep scoring up. McRae, I want to say, is where they're going for a lot of Delly's minutes, which is kind of weird.
Well, I don't know if it's that weird, because the point I was going to make is they got Mike Dunleavy and they brought back Richard Jefferson, and you hope Amon Shumpert will be better this year than last year, which, I mean, I don't think that's a high bar to clear, but that's a whole other podcast. But, you know, with McRae, I think you kind of, you're right there, because I think Delly hit threes for them, and he played defense. And McRae scored a ton in summer league, and he you know he's got a ton of potential in that area of the game, and he kind of knows that. He was on the starters and he was just like, yeah, I score a lot, it's fine. Like, he was very casual about it, but he's not a really good defender at all. Like, he looks sort of rookie, almost rookie level in that end to me. He doesn't look he knows what he's doing functionally. He looks sort of out of place at times, and he just sort of looks lost. And then I don't think he's particularly – he doesn't look particularly strong to me. You've seen him in person. Is that an unfair assessment of McRae?
He's wiry. Yeah, he's one of those guys that's like – I mean, he's huge. Like, he's 6'5", and
yeah.
I think he has like a 7'1 or 7'2 wingspan. But, yeah, it's like all wire more than it is muscle. Now, he might be a little stronger – you know, than he looks, kind of like a KD, but
yeah.
There's not a lot of muscle there, which is fine.
Yeah, but, he's super muscly.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, he looks like a guy that should be able to defend and lock up, you know, a lot of players, and, I mean, I don't even know that I've ever seen him take a shot that wasn't off the dribble, either.
That's another concern. I mean, because he had that big game at the end of the season against the Pistons, I think, but that was in with no one else there, and he was kind of just doing whatever he wanted. Summer league,
yeah.
It's like pickup. It's like it's not pickleball. It's way better than any pickup ball we're gonna play in. But I mean, it's the same sort of and kind of anything goes. When he's playing, if he ends up being a rotation guy, or they try to make him a rotation guy, he's not gonna be able to dribble a bunch and create his own shot when he's on the floor between Kyrie Irving and LeBron James, and factor in J.R. Smith, and factor in UD touches for Kevin Love, and he can't do that. He won't be doing that in the NBA and during the regular season.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming in or where. And I think that's what makes it weird. Like, hypothetically, he works just fine, but it's like, man, all right, so we've seen him score 30 points on Steve Blake, and he handled 90% of the time. And we've seen him tear up Summer League, and he handled 90% of the time there. And it's like, all right, well, when is he learning to not have the ball? It's weird. I mean, I think it can work, but the more you think about it, the more it's kind of perplexing the way they're going with it.
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of a testament to the situation they're in. They have to take a gamble on a guy like McRae because Joe Harris didn't work out. You know, no, Joe Harris prototypically in terms of an idea of what he was coming out of college, out of Virginia, was the kind of guy that, you know, you think, oh, he can shoot threes off the dribble. He can be passable in defense. He's the kind of guy you want. And he literally never could become that. And some of, you know, he didn't get a ton of chances, but, you know, he never really capitalized on what he did get and didn't do enough in Canton, I think, blow the doors off the Cavs front office. So I think that gives McRae an opportunity. And, you know, maybe there's a lot we probably don't see behind the scenes that, you know, maybe he's more comfortable that way. And it seems like the Cavs are high on him. They wouldn't have guaranteed his contract for next season if they weren't, I don't think, because they could have, you know, maybe went after a veteran that could catch the ball off the dribble or something. But I don't think they necessarily need him either because they have Dunleavy, because they're probably going to get JR back. They're going to have Shump, whatever. But Ryan, before we kind of move on to the rest of the guys that played in summer league, if you had to pick one between Kay Felder and Jordan McRae and who is more likely to see rotation minutes next season, who would it be and why?
I would pick McRae. And I would pick McRae because of a conversation that I got secondhand,
mm-hmm.
where a Cavs staffer basically said if we were giving him the minutes, you know, he could produce, you know, the rookie guys that people were talking about, Norman Powell especially, is basically, yeah, if he was getting minutes, he'd be producing like those guys were producing. So, given that I think that is how they're looking at him, and that's the belief they have in him, I would say they are starting with him over, you know, a 5'9 rookie.
Yeah.
Looks good, but I think he's already got a lot of, goodwill in the locker room and in the organization, and he'll get the first crack at replacing Dele's minutes.
Yeah, I mean, McRae definitely has those bonds. I mean, you remember the video of him singing some R&B tunes with Shump and Kyrie in the finals. It was magical. He cemented himself there. And I think Felder's probably headed to Canton. I think that makes a lot of sense for him. There's a lot of minutes there for him because Quinn Cook's not really in the picture anymore. And they kind of control the charge. They do control the charge because it's their D-League affiliate. So I think there's opportunities there for Felder to grow. And they don't need him right now, so maybe he'll get some minutes. But you look at the rest of the roster, Ryan. Is there anybody else that you think, A, they're going to get a training camp invite, and B, do you think they can make the team next year?
I don't think there's anyone that can make the team. Two guys that I think will get training camp invites, maybe three. Raphael Putney will probably get a training camp invite. I think any of these mobile bigs they have, and they brought two. So Putney is 6'11", 6'10", and he's long as hell, and he hits threes. Block shots. Doesn't really do anything else.
Yeah.
So I don't know that he could make an NBA roster, but he's a really good three-point shooter. He's really long, and, you know, he's a good shot blocker, but he's 6'11", and I think he weighs like 175 pounds. He's so skinny.
Yeah, that's not going to hold up.
Yeah, he's like one of the skinniest guys I've ever seen. So he's got some interesting talent, and his frame doesn't look like he can add a whole lot of weight. I think he's 26. So, you know, he tore up the D-League. He's probably one of those 4A guys where he's, you know, really good in the D-League and good enough to play in the NBA, but not necessarily good enough to play minutes in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I think he'd get a training camp invite. Eric Jacobson is another one. He's bigger. Also 6'11", probably like 225. So he's a little thicker, not as agile, but still pretty agile. He has range out to the 3-point line. So he's a guy that I think could get an invite as well, and might end up in a rotation somewhere down the line because he's, you know, he battles and he can shoot. And then Kenny Gabriel would be the other one. He played pretty well. And he's, you know, he had a really good few seasons overseas, 6'8 wing, can defend, can score a little bit. He's a decent 3-point shooter. So those are the three I would think would get invited. DeAndre Liggins, I guess, would be another one.
Yeah, I think his age and what he is as an idea of a player, I think maybe makes him get an invite because they can take up the 20, and I think they have some roster spots.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
I can see him. I mean, he's, you know, in his prime. He played pretty good defense in base. He's that long, lanky defender. I don't know what else he does or if that translates to, you know, the NBA. But you figure Dante Jones is one of the guys on the end of the bench. Yeah. You know, maybe Liggins has a shot. So yeah.
They don't have not a high bar to clear there. But Dante Jones got to go to the ESPYs. He was at the freaking ESPYs. James Jones wasn't even at the ESPYs.
The other guys, like Michael Stockton, looked pretty interesting. He's a point guard, but he's not getting an NBA run anywhere. He'll probably go overseas for a few years.
Yeah.
And then the other ones, man, I can't even name some of the guys that are left that I'm not thinking of.
Yeah.
The cupboard was pretty bare.
Yeah, no, and when you're the Cavs, I think you kind of pick McRae and you pick Felder and maybe one other guy, and you hope that guy works out. Last thing, Ryan, Phil Handy is a guy that gets a lot of praise, and I think deservedly so, because he's very close with Kyrie, has been huge in developing Kyrie from everything that I've read, and he seems very well-liked. Did you take anything away from what he did as a coach in Vegas?
No. It's really hard to tell, like, you know, if anything's going on because, you know, it's a bunch of guys thrown together, and especially the Cavs, McRae and Felder just want to pound the air out of the ball anyway, especially McRae. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there wasn't anything that stood out other than, you know, he's incredibly patient, and he's not one of those guys that's like Boston's coach. It was one of those, like, cursing guys out and, you know, stomping up and down. It was kind of weird. But, you know, every time someone makes a mistake, he subs in a new guy, pulls him over and talks to him for a few minutes. So he's, you know, seems like a good teacher. I know we've heard some great things about that aspect of his coaching from afar, and guys really respond well to him. But, as far as like a scheme or, hey, here's something he's really good at showing guys. You know, it's so hard to tell in summer league. Half the time you can barely tell that they're trying to play basketball.
Yeah.
So it's rough.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not something that I think lends itself to very, how do you phrase it, legitimate observations. I mean, you look at Ben Simmons was great, but, like, you know, he's, it's not exactly, he's, you know, playing against, you know, like, an average wing defender.
Right.
And when he's playing in summer league, he looks great, and I think he will be great, but, you know, it's just hard to draw those sort of conclusions, I think, right now when you look at him and he's playing against, you know, just sort of average guys. And I think that's the case for the Cavs, too, really. I mean, you look at anybody that they have, they don't, like you said with McGray, he's not playing against wing guys, and he's not really having to play off the ball. So I think that very much matters in how we evaluate anything we see in Las Vegas.
It's definitely and how they're doing. I remember like Doug McDermott last year has averaged like 19 points a game. He wasn't hitting any threes. He was like driving the whole game, like every game.
Yeah, and he's never going to do that in the NBA. He's never going to do that in the NBA.
He's never going to do that. Tyus Jones, you know, the MVP of Summer League this year. I mean, I don't know. He never really jumped off the page as far as, oh wow, he's got elite quickness. It seemed like he was a guy that was better than a lot of the other guys out there, but you know, it's one of those things where like it makes sense when you're looking at it, but if you go look at the scores later, it's like, what the hell? What?
Yeah,
I saw this. What?
Yeah, it doesn't always meet what makes sense in your head. So Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter aside from at Fear the Sword, which obviously you run? But where else can people find you on the interwebs?
So I'm actually taking a break from Twitter for an extended amount of time.
Oh, this is true. I forgot about this.
Yeah, at some point I will return because I have some professional obligations. It's just my name, which if you go to Fear the Sword, it's in the bio, so it makes it a little easier. But otherwise, it's just Ryan _ Morton, Morton. And at some point that will have content that is hopefully not incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
But for the moment, they can find me nowhere because I am hiding until I get some work stuff done.
So that's very fair. You earned it. You survived Las Vegas. Yeah, you made it, man. Like you did.
I didn't even get a t-shirt. Oh, and I did. I got two t-shirts. Never mind. We're good.
There you go. Yeah, you got your tees. You made it through 10 days of Vegas. You're good. So thank you guys. This has been the second episode of Locked On Cavaliers. You can find us on Audio Boom. We'll be on iTunes soon and Stitcher soon if we aren't already by the time this goes up. And you can follow me on Twitter at CWMWrites. You can follow the podcast at Twitter on @LockedOnCavs. And we'll talk to you guys.